But now Lori talks with Michael Honey about his book, To the Promised Land, Martin Luther King and the Fight for Economic Justice.
Thanks, Tom. Michael Honey is the Haley Professor of Humanities at the University of Washington, Tacoma, where he teaches African American and labor history. And he's author of several award-winning books, including Going Down Jericho Road, a new film, Love and Solidarity, James Lawson and Nonviolence in the Search for Workers' Rights. And as Tom mentioned, a new book just released by Norton, To the Promised Land, Martin Luther King and the Fight for Economic Justice, about which we want to talk this morning. Welcome to KABU, Mike Honey.
Hi, Lori. Glad to be here.
Great. Your book and recent articles in The Guardian and The Nation focus on Martin Luther King's misremembered legacy of struggling for economic justice and the empowerment of poor and working class people. What is this more revolutionary side of King, and why is it deliberately ignored in annual commemorations of his life's work?
I think that most people who come to the Martin Luther King holiday events come partly to celebrate the legacy of the freedom struggles of the past, and they bring a lot of children who want to be kind of inaugurated in this, but it also brings in a lot of political leaders and sometimes commercial leaders, and so the pitch on King is very often, in most cases, focused on I have a dream, colorblind society, where we will be judged by the content of our character, not the color of our skin. But that only scratches the surface of King. And the other larger framework for King is one that causes people to look at the way things are today. And if you follow King's analysis, then you're going to have to be very critical of the way things are today. And so, you know, that's not something that always gets brought up. I've heard in recent years we've made some progress. I've heard people at our Tacoma event last year, we had a local African-American history teacher from Lincoln High School where he really laid it all out, and I was surprised to hear that. But that's unusual. And so what I'm doing with the book, To the Promised Land, Martin Luther King and the Fight for Economic Justice, is trying to give people a larger picture of King and what he was all about, and also that it's not simply about King. So on the cover of the book, there's no picture of Martin Luther King. There's a picture of African Americans picketing for racial justice on the job. And the book is oriented that way. It's really about not King per se, but it's about what King represents and what that history 50 years since King, April 4th, 1968, when he was killed, how we should understand the legacy and why it's important and not something we should just gloss over with I Have a Dream, but something that really can help us to understand the situation now and what we could or should do about it.
And that's another misremembering of King's legacy, that he was this messiah figure rather than a part of a much larger social movement. And you describe these two phases of King's activism, the first leading to the Civil Rights and Voting Rights Acts, and then the next, or what you call phase two of his activism, that's really about attacking capitalism and militarism as impediments to a just society. How did he move to that position, and to what extent was he moved by the movement, and to what extent did he try to reorient the movement towards critiquing capitalism and militarism?
It's interesting that most of our early scholarship saw King as a civil rights leader until we got the Civil Rights Act of 64 and the Voting Rights Act of 65, and then he turned in a more radical direction, so we call it the Radical King, from 65 to 68. And in 1966, he started working on the conditions of poverty and injustice in the big cities in the North and the West, after racial upheavals in Watts, L.A., he moved to Chicago and tried to work on open housing from the slums in west side of Chicago. And then in 67, he came out strongly and brilliantly against the Vietnam War. And his speech on April 4th, 1967, 1 year to the day before he was killed, provides really the most comprehensive critique of the Vietnam War of any mainstream leader of that generation. And he didn't see it as a one-off thing. He saw it tied into all of American foreign policy and U.S. imperialism and intervention around the globe on behalf of corporations against poor people and peasants in places like Vietnam or Guatemala, El Salvador, South Africa. So it was a brilliant analysis, and he was totally condemned by the mass media for this, and his support in the public polls dropped shockingly. And then he started the Poor People's Campaign in 1968, and his whole theme there was that we need to reorient the country's economy away from militarism and war and spend that money instead on housing, healthcare, jobs, decent employment, and a minimum income for everyone. And, of course, union rights, which he had been supporting all along, and then finally ending in Memphis, where he supports the Memphis sanitation workers in a strike that ends up where he's killed. But what the book shows is that this was actually not a radical turn by King. He was responding to the conditions of the time. And he said in Memphis on March 18th, when he first came there in 68, he said, the freedom movement is big, and the first phase was to get equality before the law and voting rights, because without that, we have no power. But he always said that the whole picture was about getting justice on all levels for oppressed people, African Americans, former slaves, Native Americans, Mexican Americans, Puerto Ricans, poor whites, everybody. And so this was an overall analysis of society, and it wasn't actually so new. He had written to Coretta Scott, who became his wife in 1952, where he said, I intend to preach, this is, he's still a graduate student, I intend to preach to create a warless world where the needs of all people are met. He was also writing to her about the failure of capitalism to meet people's needs. And so, you know, these themes came out during the course of his life as it seemed to be the right time to talk about those things in a practical way. He always wanted to get results. And so the first phase was about the civil rights phase, trying to get those results, which we're still fighting for. And then the second phase, as he put it in Memphis, was for economic equality.
So really represents his strategy rather than a fundamental shift in his beliefs or goals for the movement. And right. So that he was always aware of the need for completely changing U.S. society.
It grows out of his basic framework, which is the social gospel of Christianity, that the important thing is to deal with the poor and the people who are left out, and the rich people can take care of themselves, but they shouldn't run everything and they shouldn't be the dominant force in society. So there's the social gospel, and then there's nonviolence. And nonviolence, as James Lawson, King's advisor, said, is not just about somebody getting attacked by the police or somebody being killed in a war. Nonviolence is also about poverty, racism, all forms of injustice. Those are all forms of violence. So somebody who has committed themselves to nonviolence has a radical agenda right from the beginning.
Well, Mike, let's talk about the recent 50th anniversary of Martin Luther King's assassination. You were in Memphis for the commemoration, and Memphis is still a city with, as I understand, the highest rates of poverty and infant mortality of any U.S. city of its size. But you were there for a pretty exciting revival of movements in the city for bringing about economic justice.
Yeah, it was an amazing week. People came from all over the country, particularly trade union people. I was in a march on April 4th, 50 years since the day he died, with thousands of people, including international longshore and warehouse workers from Tacoma and Oakland and other places, machinist union, United Auto Workers Union, healthcare workers, people from AFSCME, of course, American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, and that was the union that he died fighting to get bargaining in Memphis. And the feeling in that march was that King is a labor hero as well as a civil rights hero, and that the reason to come was not just to pay homage to King, but to rekindle the fires that King helped to light during his lifetime, and particularly looking at this anniversary as a time for younger people to understand how it's all connected and that the economic justice framework is the one that really helps to move us forward in the present time.
And AFSCME, I understand, has a new I Am 2018 campaign to fight for racial and economic justice.
And also the Fight for 15 people were there and used the February 12th, the day the strike started 50 years before, as a day to picket McDonald's and hold conferencing on how to organize the South. And a lot of young African Americans from around the region were there. It was very hopeful in my mind because a lot of young people were involved in all of these.
And the Reverend William Barber and others are reviving the Poor People's Campaign. You talk a lot about the Poor People's Campaign in your book. But just in our final minute here, Mike Honey, at this historical moment, in a time of escalating crises, why return to the story of Memphis and Martin Luther King?
Well, that's a good question. When I started working on doing this book, that's the question I had to answer. There are so many books on King, and they keep coming out. Do people really need another book? My publisher, Norton, said yes, because it's my book, Going Down Jericho Road, Martin Luther King and the Memphis Sanitation Strike. That's 500 pages long. A lot of the really great books on King are long because it's a big story. This book, To the Promised Land, is 200 pages. It's designed for classroom and for union hall and community use. But it gives you the overview of the different aspects of King's agenda and the unfinished promise of the freedom movement, which is not just economic justice, but that as part of the whole picture of human liberation.
Well, Michael Honey, thanks so much for joining us this morning on the Old Mole Variety Hour and for reminding us of the relevance of Martin Luther King Jr.'s campaigns.
Freedom now, that's what we say.
Adelante.
And we also say solidarity forever.
Right, right. Well, thanks, Michael.
Okay. Good to be with you.